Blog Talk Radio. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-room-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, hey.
Happy Friday.
And happy Mercury retrograde.
Which we've both been experiencing. Me in just the last half an hour trying to connect to the chat.
It's at least I took mine at the hit at the beginning of the week, so yeah. One of us is holding it together, I think.
It's always a good time. You just have to laugh your way through it so you don't, you know, jump off a bridge or something dramatic.
True. Yeah. So what has your, other than the connectivity tonight, what has been happening with you this week?
It's been a pretty good week. Today, actually, I met with Christina, who owns Mirror Tea House in Sebastopol, and she's just down the street from my little shop, Milk and Honey, and her and I are planning something in October together. We're going to do a tea and tarot night, and we're going to have goodies and tasty treats and tea and tarot readings, and then we're going to close the evening off with a seance.
Ooh.
So it's going to be very Halloween-y and Victorian and dramatic, which I just love. It's Muir Tea House, like John Muir Tea House. Muir. It's hard to hear that, I suppose. So more details will be revealed as we nail down the specifics, but it should be a lot of fun.
And I will be one of the ones, I think,
that's right,
participating.
Yeah, you, me, and Polly, who is another reader from Milk and Honey, will all be offering our excellent services and tarot readings.
Hmm. This looks like it's going to be fun.
Yes, yes. So how are you? What's your week been like?
Well, Mercury hit me with a bang. I had some travel plans that I had to rethink and redo at the beginning of the week, and then it kind of evened out, and I've had a lot of people that have been in need, because Mercury retrograde tends to do that, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, sitting here, it was learning all about what we wanted to talk about, Isis, which
right.
is the goddess that we're going to be talking about.
That's right.
So, but it was... It was pretty hairy there. I thought, you know, for a while it was going to look like a no-go, but I'm really happy it is now.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and I guess you want to launch right into our topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. So tonight we are featuring a deity. Tonight is the Egyptian goddess Isis. And I thought... When Elvira and I were going through some of the key points of Isis and the things we wanted to talk about, I thought it might also be a good idea to talk about why. Why a goddess? What does that even have to do with witchcraft? And what does it have to do with any of the other stuff that we talk about? And I feel okay in speaking for both of us for a minute. Feel free to correct me, but we both are goddess worshippers. I myself refer to my way of worshiping deity as a polytheist. So there are many gods that I talk to and worship and communicate with and give offerings to. And so learning about some of the options as far as deity goes is one of the things we wanted to do on this show. And we were noticing when we were talking about Isis that both of us sort of had our entryway into paganism or witchcraft through Egypt. And I think that's kind of a thing. I think Egypt is an entry point. It's the gateway drug. Egypt is the gateway drug.
Oh my goodness,
to witchcraft and paganism.
True. I think it's the allure. I think it's the exoticness of it. Mm. And obviously, more than one young lady who has chosen to do this has gone into it with the idea of some one of the movies or things that they've seen or read about in terms of Egypt. And then you just kind of get started. And I was telling Phoenix that my experience started with basically doing a room design all on Egypt, not a pyramid, I'm sorry, but it was, you know, the barge. I had my bed draped and it was all hanging with the curtains and all of the different things. My parents were really cool about it, but I could remember, you know, even the steps up to the bed because I had a high antique bed at that time. Fascinating. And then she started telling me about how she got into it and what she did, and we were both giggling because it was almost, you know, for two separate people, very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually a story I think I've heard a lot from different folks who've gotten involved with witchcraft or polytheism or paganism or Wicca or whatever label umbrella you want to tuck it under. But I think Egypt, you know, it is a culture we learn about in school, like the Greeks. You know, we learn about those cultures. We learn about those gods from a more academic perspective. But when you get the introduction to these gods, it makes it a little bit easier to kind of look for more and see, what does this feel like? Well, you know, the first goddess that I felt sort of reached out and tapped me was Bastet, which, you know, we'll talk about another night, but that's another Egyptian goddess. And so, yeah, just those Egyptians, they're alluring.
That is true. That is true. They even have made it into more young adult books. One of the ones that I was fascinated with that just, I mean, it isn't a just, but Rick Riordan's The Red Pyramid, and it talks about being demigods of the Egyptian, not pantheon, but the Egyptian pharaohs and then the different energy patterns. It was fascinating, and I was reading this probably a few years ago when it first was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of books, there is a book that I highly recommend before we sort of dig into some of Isis's amazing stretch across the globe. But there's a book called The Temple of the Cosmos, and it's written by Jeremy Nadler. And this is a book where he's done a lot of academic research and study into how the Egyptians may have done their worship and why they did certain things and how. And, you know, it's science, right? But it's science with a little bit of make-believe isn't the right word, but we can't really know what they were doing. We can take what we have and the information that's survived the centuries, but we can't really know. But his book is a fascinating look at day-to-day life in Egypt, and for the common folk, for the slaves, for the wealthy, for the pharaoh, and you get a kind of a peek. So anyone who's interested in learning more about Egyptian mythology, Egyptian way of life, and when the Egyptian gods were really powerful, this is a great book. I taught at a California Witch Camp a couple years ago, and we worked with Isis as our myth for the week, and this was our go-to book. It was our main resource.
Mm.
It's really a great book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the one you were telling me is out of print?
No, that's the other one.
Oh.
So there's another great book. It's called Isis Magic by M. Isadora Forrest. And from what I've heard, because I have a few friends who are ISIS devotees, and this book is apparently out of print, but it's like it's the go-to ISIS magic goddess juju deep juicy goddessy energy. This is the book, and it's really hard to find. Even used copies on the internet are at least $40. So if you have this book, congratulations. And if you're looking to do more ISIS magic or delve more into that side of ISIS, the mysterious, the devotional, this is a great book. And Elvira and I both have a copy. Lucky us.
Actually, it's a friend of mine's copy. I have to own up to that. So she'll be happy to know how much it is of value in the manner we're talking. But, and so we kind of shared our books that we were looking at. And now, you know, we've got our platform. And to me, goddess energy is just that, goddess energy. And I think it's pagan, it's earthy, and it comes out in different forms. So Isis is the mother goddess at this point that I think we're going to jump into talking about.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. So we're calling her Isis. We're using her Greek name. Her name traditionally is Aset, A-S-E-T, Aset. So because she's become so commonly known as Isis, we'll continue to use that name for her. But that is the name given to her by the Greeks. And thank all the gods for the Greeks, right? So much of what we have is because they kept good records. Good job, guys.
They also realized that it was not to them, it wasn't the sacredness that it was to the Egyptians to write down and to put into the format of what we now are looking at, the written word.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that makes it even more interesting because, yep, they did that and they may have taken things a little farther, but we have paper we can look at or papyrus or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So Isis.
Hmm.
So the thing to keep in mind is that we think of Egypt as this one country, this, you know, over there in the Middle East. It's right there on the Nile, runs through it. But when the gods were being born and when the gods were in their heightened, at their ultimate power, right, Egypt wasn't what we think of now. Even the landscape was different. It was a much more fertile place. It wasn't quite so desert. There was, when the Nile overflowed, it became a green and luscious environment. But it was also split into different fractions. There was Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt, and over time those things were either very different places to be or more unified or whatever, and that changed over the centuries because Egypt was a seat of power for a really long time, way longer than, like, the United States has been in existence, for example.
Oh, definitely.
Thousands of years.
Thousands.
So, you know, we think of it as this one thing, this one snapshot in time, but we're looking at a way longer time frame and lots of different places.
Mm-hmm.
So Isis has become this powerhouse, and in her birth, she might have been very different. It took time for her to grow into full power.
True, true. And one of the things that I noticed that when I was, you know, checking up on dates and things is that her worship spans at least 3,500 years, you know, from beginning to the Greeks to the Romans. And, of course, we're not talking about present time. We're just talking about the actual worshiping in the manner that the more ancient world did.
Right.
So that's a long, long time, far longer than I can think of.
Right. It's kind of hard to contemplate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So one of the things that we will talk about, not now, but after the break, are some stories about Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And the parts of her myth, as far as the different festivals. Do you want to launch into some of the correspondences and festivals and things like that?
Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah. Yeah. One of the things, Isis is known as the goddess of 10,000 names, right? So we thought we might start with some of her correspondences by naming some of those names. Don't worry, we're not going to say all 10,000, because that would take a very long time. But here's a few. So I'm gonna pick the ones that are a little bit more fun for me. Creatrix of the Nile Flood. Dispeller of Attack. Divine One. Female Principle in Nature. First Offspring of Time. Giver of Life. Goddess of Moisture. Goddess of the Crossroads. Greatest of the Gods. Hidden One. Inventrix. I think I want that to be my title. Inventrix. Lady Isis. Lady of the Sea. Maker of Kings. Mistress of the Earth. Name of the Sun. She of the Moon. The All Goddess. And I want to say this, but I might just destroy it in my pronunciation. Venerandum. Venerandum, she who must be adored.
Oh, I like that.
Ooh,
yes.
So there's a few, maybe even a dozen of the 10,000 names that she was known as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with that, this woman of many names, this goddess that has many facets, some of the festivals, and she, you know, it was part of the festivals were based on the actual history of her going and looking for Osiris and the myth that went between her and Osiris. And so, of course, we have what was interesting is March 3rd was the blessing of the fleets. She was the ruler of seas.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant it opened the Mediterranean for navigation. And the statue would be, you know, taken to the water, and she would be offered beautiful flowers, and there was milk poured on the sand, and you know, it was this real rich blessing of the waves. So, and then of course they wound up taking a little boat. It was a crewless boat, and they put spices and things in it and sent it out to sea.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And I know her birth is connected with the inundation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that she was the fourth born, so she's the baby. Yeah. But her birthday, and I don't have the date here. I'm looking through my notes for it, but it's sometime in June, isn't it?
No, July 17th.
July. Yeah. Yeah. So that's when the Nile overflows. That's when the river inundates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me that I always think of July, you know, it's the height of summer. Everything's dry and parched. But that's when the river would flood. That's when Isis would bring the blessings of that rich earth, because the Nile would flood and it would turn the landscape into this lush green place where that's finally when things could grow. It's such a
right.
different cycle than what we're used to here in Northern California.
Right, right. And because, you know, again, we're talking about an area that was arid and dry, and this was the only life that came from the Nile, and so it was the first night, obviously, of a feast, and then she would, you know, they would go to the new year, and basically that became July 19th was the night of the new year, the drop, the timing of what would come in. They would represent it with that, because think about it, that was the new year. It brought in the areas of water to bring in life.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that was, and of course there is the other aspect of the tears of Isis,
right,
flooding,
right.
So that is part of that myth that we will be talking about later.
Right. Yeah. And you often see her depicted with wings, and she's connected to falcons. And this is partially due to her son Horus, who is the falcon god. But there is something powerful. You see, actually, this is another one of those things you see across cultures with goddesses, that being connected to a bird of prey and having that high sight, you know, like when a falcon is high in the sky, it has a way of seeing the landscape from this much higher vantage point, being able to take in the whole picture instead of just this one piece. And that's part of her magic as well, and she's connected to healing. The wings, the falcon wings also bring healing.
Mm-hmm. And protection.
Right.
So, and we do have the arts that she did teach was such things as grinding the corn and spinning the flax and weaving cloth. So she, again, is another goddess that presents the more home-based things that help sustain the society.
Right, which is fascinating because she is also connected to the pharaoh.
Exactly.
Right? So this is a goddess of the common people and of the ruling class.
Mm-hmm.
The pharaoh was believed to be the child of Isis. And depending on which dynasty you look at, each ruler, and as time progressed, these things changed and molded and moved, and, you know. But in different dynasties, the pharaoh was either a representative of Isis or married to Isis or the child of Isis. And it just, you know, you can pick your poison. It just depends on which dynasty you look at to how Isis was looked at by the ruling class.
Mm-hmm.
But you also see her as the mother, the nurturer. Many of her statues and symbols, she's nursing her child. And this is a piece of symbolism that actually has carried into modern time with the Virgin Mary.
Exactly. And that, again, brings us to how long she has survived in many forms.
Right.
So I know that she also dealt with magic and alchemy.
Yes.
And these are things that, again, is another story that we will tell after the break.
But that's what I find so fascinating is often, especially if you don't know, like if everyone's heard of Isis, and I mean the goddess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has had some interaction with this goddess, even if it's just in fifth grade, right?
Right. Exactly.
So, but what we know of her is the mother of Horus, or the wife who cries tears all over the place looking for her lost husband. But she's actually a trickster, and she knows how to use magic to get what she wants. She doesn't just sit there and take it. She fights back.
Right.
And I love that because she's sort of been painted in this more calm and sweet and soft energy. And, yes, that's my experience of her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also a badass. You know, I love that.
And it's interesting because I think we can, I'll sort of share this because I know part of it is there is both the white Isis and the black Isis, and that as those aspects are about her being both in the white, the bright, illuminated mother of compassion and love, and then the black Isis is that of chaos and cunning and the power process from that point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about those two aspects in deity form, it's really about her taking on the totality of the feminine in its most empowered state.
Mm-hmm. And you could also look at the white and the black as the sun and the growing and that heat.
Mm-hmm.
And the black as the deep, rich soil, where the things grow from, what we are fed by.
Right.
So she is such a well-rounded goddess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it really, it brings the wisdom that she can bring to the people and to us as individuals that are now studying and working with her and worshiping with her.
Yeah. Now, as you know, Elvira, I do these goddess gatherings once a month, and I've been doing them for several years, and we just did Isis 2 months ago. So, you know, we always tell the history, and we tell her some of her stories, and then we do a devotional ritual so folks get an opportunity to meet her from a cerebral level and then meet her from a spiritual or emotional level. And one of the things I really encourage for people who want to work with Isis is to also connect with her sister, Nephthys. Isis has a twin, and sometimes the white and the black Isis are Isis and Nephthys. But Nephthys, I really identify with because Isis is bright and beautiful, and everyone adores her. And she doesn't have to try. She's just gifted and amazing. And her sister Nephthys has all of these gifts too, but she's not as seen. And so she has to be a little bit more sneaky. She has to try a little bit harder to get what she wants. And she harbors this jealousy towards her perfect sister. Mm-hmm. And so there's something very powerful too about connecting to that energy of the bright and the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that we each of us hold both of those.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's interesting that that plays out in other of the pantheons of other cultures,
yeah,
which we will get to, I'm sure, down the road. So it is a theme.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And I know that some of the things, you know, you were mentioning the hawk, and then there's the eagle, but there's also the scorpion,
mm-hmm,
and there's the lion. And there were some interesting things I found that were out of the norm, other than, obviously, like, scarab and some of the different aspects that you can use as far as totem animals or pieces of culture that you can work with in terms of the animal kingdom.
Yeah. The other thing I find fascinating about this goddess is her reach. Mm-hmm. This is a spirit, an entity, a deity who still has a place of worship to her on the River Thames in London, right? She not only was in Egypt, but her worship spread across the world. She was so powerful and so beloved that she made it to England, and they still have a shrine to her. Like, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a goddess, the goddess of 10,000 names. This is a goddess who's been everywhere, and the most modern, I'm using air quotes when I say modern, the temples that lasted the longest into more Christian rule,
mm-hmm,
were Isis temples.
That's fascinating. And that's really the staying power of this deity.
Yeah.
And yeah, she started in a culture that we do venerate for many reasons as one that starts different significant patterns that then go forward, whether it's through the Christianity or through other avenues, we find that she is the one that seems to connect it all.
Right, right. And I don't want to get on too much of a soapbox,
yes,
on this topic, because you know how I can get on soapboxes. But I feel like it's important to claim these goddesses, especially from areas of the world where there is so much oppression happening, especially to women, and where there is so much upheaval. I mean, think of the Middle East right now. They need ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's doubly important for us to be talking about these goddesses that are from cultures with brown skin. It's so important right now. We need these goddesses to have a resurgence. We need their energy in the world. It's important. And honoring the roots of where they come from, honoring the roots of where they come from is vital. And I just, you know, the fact that there is an organization that has stolen her name, and let's be real, the American media has given them that name. That's not the name that they choose to go by. But, you know, if you put in just her name in Google, you're not going to get her. You have to put in ISIS goddess or clarify your search, because you're going to be taken to this other organization that I don't want to spend too much time talking about, because it's a waste of her breath.
Right.
But this is the time to reclaim these goddesses. This is the time to bring their power back and remember them and speak their stories. What is remembered lives.
Right. And remember, we also have, with what you're talking about, the male energy right now, or the distorted male energy that is coming through in that format. And again, we talk about distorted male energies that attempted,
yeah,
the eradication to begin with.
Right, which didn't work so good.
No, so we do have hope, don't
right.
we?
Right. That's, you know, that's, you find this all over the world as well, where the Christianity is coming into power, and that's fine. There's beautiful things about Christianity, and they couldn't stop you from worshiping ISIS. They couldn't stop the people from worshiping ISIS, and so they incorporated her, and they said, yes, ISIS, her name is Mary. Her name is Mary, and you see that's not Horus, it's Jesus. She's nursing Jesus. And so she was so powerful. She was one of those goddesses that they just couldn't stop her worship. So they just incorporated her.
Mm-hmm.
They kept. She's been kept alive with a different name.
Right. Right. And just to kind of go back a little bit, I did want to mention that when you were talking about England and her temple,
yes,
the temple itself, and one of the things that was in all of the temples was a stone-carved boat with a what would be a bird head and neck, sort of a swooping goose-like neck, and it would have a figure in it, and it was the goddess Isis. And so this particular item, of course, was then eventually taken, and the fairy tale, The Witch in the Stone Boat, was created to, shall we say, make a distinction of the worship of this particular deity and made it a negative.
Right.
And yet she was taken as a deity and incorporated because they couldn't completely take it
right.
away.
They divorced the magic.
Exactly.
They keep this pure virginal mother as Mary,
mm-hmm.
and then they divorce the magic from that spirit and make that a witch.
Right.
That's bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I also just wanted to quickly, before we shift gears, I wanted to talk about knot magic, K-N-O-T, which is a big thing in Egyptian myth and in Egyptian magic, knot magic. And I have had so first, let me just say, I am a skeptic, right? I'm pagan. I am a witch. I do spell work. I read tarot cards, and I'm still a skeptic. So I just need to be clear with that. But I have met a very beautiful spirit who is an Isis devotee. She has gone through many different trainings and initiations into the cult of Isis. And I actually met her in Australia at a witch camp.
Ooh.
And at this camp, it looked like a storm was coming in, but we really wanted to have a ritual outdoors. And she said, oh, don't worry, I'm going to knot that storm in my hair. So there's this whole practice. Knotting hair and braiding hair was really big in Egypt, and it's a magical process. So she tied these knots in her hair, and she said she was tying the storm into her hair. And I was like, okay, sure, yeah, okay. It didn't rain. We had our ritual outside. It was beautiful. It was the sky remained very clear. We could see the stars. It was a full moon. It was very magical. And then we went indoors, and we were chatting about the ritual and sort of debriefing the things that worked or maybe needed to be fixed. And she goes, oh, I need to release those knots. I need to release the storm. And I shit you not, she started to take the first knot out of her hair, and boom, it started pouring with rain outside.
Oh, my.
She's like, oh, yeah, I released the storm. I do this kind of stuff all the time. And I was blown away. But weather magic and knot magic are part of Isis's skills, and her priestesses in the Isiums and her yeah. temples would have been trained in these forms of magic. And to witness, for me, my skeptical self, to witness it was one of those moments I'll never forget. It was so amazing.
That is awesome.
It was so amazing.
Wow. Wow. So basically then there would be different colored cords that I gather they would then knot into specific patterns.
Right.
Okay. That's just so I could clarify my little brain here, because I know that that we talk about knot magic in other parts of pagan traditions
right.
and religions.
Right.
But this, of course, is particularly
yeah.
for this one.
There's a specific knot that is connected to Isis, which is the tayet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's believed that this word either translates to welfare or it translates to life. Welfare meaning faring well,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it looks like the ankh, you know, the symbol for eternal life. It's sort of a cross with a loop at the top of it. I think that's probably a good way of describing
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is specifically one of Isis's symbols, and it's a symbol of not magic. It's a symbol of life.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that we got that to be able to do before the break, and obviously as soon as the break is back, we will be starting with our stories.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, are there some good ones
for
her.
No kidding. No kidding.
Yeah, and then after some storytelling, you're going to share a little ritual for her, yeah?
Oh, definitely. And it was very, very interesting how it did come about. So, yes, wonderful little ritual.
So we'll be back in just a minute.
In just a minute. So enjoy the break.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendola's Corner, starring Kendola Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we're back.
Back to the present time.
So we want to talk, before we dig into the stories, we want to mention the Mystic Fair that is coming up in October.
October 15th and 16th.
And that's in Santa Rosa, California. It's the third year, is that right? The third year?
Yes. No, wait a minute.
Fourth year?
Fourth year. We're doing
fourth year. That's awesome.
And it's going to be free admission and free parking. It'll be 10 to 5. They're going to have a virtual reality booth showcase. And we've got tons of exhibitors. I know you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. There's other, you know, there's going to be dancing. There's a belly dance troupe that will be doing some shows along with some musicians. So they're going to have a lot going.
Nice. Yeah. I'll be there repping for Milk and Honey, and I know Lucky Mojo will be there, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, it will. Yes.
Yeah.
And now,
on to her story.
Stories.
So in the beginning, in the very beginning, there was the sky goddess Nut, and there was the earth god Geb. And they loved each other so much, and they were intertwined with each other, and they held each other, and they were so in love. And this made Ra, the sun god, very jealous. Just watching their love and watching them be together really made him feel jealous and lonely. And so he rode his chariot across the sky and split them, sending Nut into the sky and sending Geb into the earth, where they could no longer touch, but only stare longingly at each other for the rest of eternity. And Ra thought that he had been successful and he would still remain the most powerful of gods. But he didn't know that in the time that Geb and Nut had lined together, had held each other and had been in embrace, that Nut had become pregnant. And over a four-day period, she gave birth to the four gods. First was Osiris. Next was Set. Then Nephthys. And finally, Isis was born on the fourth day. And on that day, the Nile overflowed and the landscape was lush.
That is really juicy.
Yes.
And from there, the next setup would be the one where, of course, Isis meets her husband, Osiris, which is her brother, but we don't talk about those things. And what we wind up is they marry. He is the fertility god. And unfortunately, Set, or their brother, was very, very envious, and so he basically kills and imprisons Osiris in a coffin and throws it into the Nile. And of course, Isis goes looking for the coffin, and through that, there are a series of different adventures she goes through, and she has to conceal herself, and she can't show who she really is, and she finally finds the coffin. But unfortunately, Set retakes it. And, of course, we then have another part of the myth where it goes into, he cuts up Osiris into 14 pieces and just scatters the heck out of them. And then, of course, Isis has to go hunting for all the pieces, which she does find, except for the phallus, because the Nile crab ate it. But because she's got magic as part of what she is able to do, she reconstitutes not only his body, but magically restoring the phallus. And then by that process, she then conceives and has Horus. Now, Horus the Younger, because officially there is another Horus in the pantheon called Horus the Elder. So Horus the Younger is her son, and that is how they wind up with the triad of Isis, Osiris, and Horus.
Mm. Nice.
Yes.
And then we have the story of Isis and Ra. Mm. Ra, he's a tricksy guy because he's, you know, he wants to be number one. He wants to be the most powerful god. And for a while he was. And then Osiris became a little bit more popular. And then Isis became even more popular than the two of them. But Isis is known as a healing goddess. And she knew that she could possess a little bit more power, a little bit more magic, if she could learn Ra's true name, because to know someone's true name is to have power over them. We all know that as a magical practitioner. Mm-hmm. To know someone's true name is to have power over them. So she decided to trick Ra. And she created a snake out of the sand, and she sent it after Ra. And this snake wound its way and snuck into Ra's chariot that he rode across the sky, and when Ra was distracted, the snake bit him. And the venom coursed through his body, and Isis was the healer. The only way that he could be healed from the snake bite was to go to Isis, who had the magical mixture, the antidote to that venom. And he begged her, Isis, please, please, I need your help. And she refused. And he begged, I'll give you anything, I'll give you anything, and she refused. Ra, you're a powerful god. You're the god of the sun. You don't need my help. You can figure this out on your own. And he said, please, please, Isis, I will give you anything. And she said, okay, tell me your true name. And he tells her. And so she possesses the power of Ra now. So she's not just a healer. She's not just the goddess of the Nile. She's not just the wife of Osiris, but now she knows the power of Ra. She steps into ultimate power at that point.
Well, I'm impressed with that.
I love that.
That is so, so cool.
I love it.
Yeah. So that, of course, is just three.
Right.
I mean, there's others where, obviously, in her adventures, she meets a Phoenician goddess named Astarte, and I mean, there are all these different entwined aspects that she goes through, and in those little stories, of course, are even more of her magic.
Right, and so there's a whole story. It's actually, of course, because I am a fan of Nephthys so much, but there, Nephthys tricks Osiris into lying with her so that she may have his child. And that is Anubis, who is born from this union. But Isis takes him in and raises him as her own. And she completely forgives her sister for the trickery and understands and is calm and kind and has patience. And Isis and Nephthys, when Isis searches for Osiris all over the world, Nephthys goes with her. It's a very sweet, you know, she's a very sweet goddess, and she's very forgiving and understanding. And, you know, don't mess with her. She knows how to get what she needs. She possesses all the magic, and she can help lead you to healing. She can help lead you to magic. She can help lead you to finding your power.
Right.
She's awesome.
She is one awesome lady.
Yeah.
Kick ass.
Yeah.
And part of that is that when you take it for a aspect, she basically helps us to remember ourselves through what becomes the shamanic death that we experience in different areas of our life.
I want to emphasize that word, remember. Right? She's taking the pieces. If we think of that story that Elvira told about Osiris, and Isis had to collect all of his pieces, she had to remember him. She had to put him back together.
Mm-hmm.
She can show us how to do that.
And that's basically what we would look at in, well, I guess would be called restoration or restorative mm-hmm. process, whether it's in healing of one's health or wealth or love or any part of that aspect of what has been broken and hurt. So before the ritual that I will describe, it's also part of the way of looking at it is that we go through our grief process, which she did. She cried. She inundated the Nile with tears. She wound up being in a place where she was dark and alone and scared and unhappy and, you know, the things that are part of when you lose something
right.
very important in your life.
Right.
And from there, it's about going to the quest. Then we go look. We go look to find what's going on. How can we go forward? What is our next step and our next step and our next step?
Yes.
And from there, obviously, there's a lot of confusion and a lot of feelings of, where am I? I'm in a big hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and having to decide what you're going to let go of. And you know, Nagashiva in the chat room points out, in the story, what she's remembering is the phallus of Osiris. She can't find that piece. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And when we take this story and we look in our own lives, sometimes when we're piecing things back together, some of the pieces don't come back. Some of the pieces we have to let go of
mm-hmm.
in order to find that healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the story, she creates a golden phallus. So where can we take the pieces that are broken and add the gold and make them stronger and better than they were before?
Mm-hmm. Which, again, comes to the concept of alchemy, you know, that aspect of her magic where we put it into practice. And, of course, then the last stage is we are revived, we are resurrected, but we are not perfect and we are not the same.
Right.
And that part of it is what most of us, when we go through something, have the hardest time with, because it's not the same. And I think that, you know, true healing basically comes as a replacement of loss with something new and better. And that kind of a process is what I will probably take as the ritual. And, you know, if we have anything more, I want to make the ritual the last thing, but if, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I think, you know, getting to the ritual and being able to look at how that might, what healing I can get from that and what, how I can look at that, her story and her magic and her power in my own life. I
mm-hmm.
think that's why we work with deity, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why as witches and, you know, not everyone who uses the term witch is going to work with different deities. You know, witchcraft is a much bigger thing than the worship piece of it. But I know for both of us, that's part of how we do magic. And as a priestess, that's part of how I, especially how I do magic. I bring, it's important for me to bring the goddesses into the light, out of the broom closet, you know. And so I feel that when we look at their stories and when we hear their tales, not only are we remembering them and keeping them alive by talking about them, but we're looking at those stories. You know, why were these stories created? What were our ancestors doing? Why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is lessons to be learned. There is help in these stories. And maybe this story isn't where you are in your life right now. Perhaps there's another story that can help you. Or when you're lost or when you're broken, just like folks turn to the Psalms or to pieces of scripture to find healing and solace and a balm on a broken heart, the stories of these goddesses can offer the same sort of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And especially a goddess who has experienced such loss and still possesses magic and power and knows how to work her way through the world. It can provide us mere mortals with so much information and so much to learn and so much power.
Mm-hmm. She had great compassion and depth of love that she followed it.
Yeah.
And was able to find the wholeness that she could recreate.
Right.
So on that note, the ritual basically would be to set up an altar, find a picture of Isis if you happen to have a statue that's more than, you know, sufficient, but sometimes getting something off the internet with Isis, and I like the one with her wings and the kneeling aspect, that she's kneeling, and it gives you the sense that she's kneeling down and being on your level. Mm-hmm. And
her healing position.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's her healing position. And then you take that and you put that with, you know, maybe a cloth that has old stars or glitter or something, so you get the idea that she's in the sky, the night sky. And then what I would do is get a candle. I always love candles. Candles are kind of like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a candle.
They're so witchy.
I know. They're so witchy. You get a candle and you light it, and you get a little mirror and you place it on the table, and you get a feather and a flower, and you kind of add the things that will enhance this particular altar. Now, what you'll do is, with starting in more of a darkened room, you will start to say the thing that you are focusing on that is the loss, and you will talk about it and you will grieve it. And if you cry and if you scream, luckily if you're home without your kids around, it would be better. But it's the idea that you speak it out loud. You grieve it out loud. You don't hide it under a pillow or a smile.
Mm.
You speak it. It's raw. And as soon as you finish speaking that and you get what you feel out, then I want to say, go to where you are at this moment in reconstruction and look at the steps that you have done since the loss of this particular situation, person, event, whatever, and start working on building the idea that you now have a path. You are now making something whole. It may not be a lot. It may be something small. It may not be all together. It may be too fresh. But continue that process until you feel that I stepped outside and I was able to walk the dog. I was able to go to work. I was able to do this. And then from that point, you take some perfume that you have and you anoint the goddess and you anoint your mirror and you anoint yourself. And then you take that mirror and you look into that mirror and you see you are who you are, whole and beautiful, completely and totally. It doesn't mean that you won't have your moments, but at that moment you are whole and complete, and you're looking back at yourself as a beautiful individual. And you can do this on a full moon, a dark moon, any moon.
Mm.
But I think it's something that, you know, if you want to even do it on a weekly basis, to give yourself the ability to say, yes, this is what I did this week.
Mm.
I became more whole. Mm.
Do you recommend giving an offering to Isis when you do this working so that you can feed her?
Of course, you feed her.
Yes.
And one of the things that you would probably do, I know that they talk about milk.
Mm-hmm.
There's also grain. There is, I think we have lettuce, I think is another one of her. Lettuce is one of her.
And beer.
And beer. Oh, I'm sure that will hit home for a lot.
Yes.
So we can always have a little beer.
Yes.
So you offer that to the goddess. And when you've finished your ritual, it is always good to take these offerings and go outside and give them to nature.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Nice. No, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, she as one of the goddesses that has walked with me on and off, on and off, this was something of an interesting culmination for me personally in my life.
Yeah.
And talking about and looking at and finding the information or getting this discussion between Phoenix and I before the show, it was very, very powerful for me. So I really say thank you.
Yeah, and thank you to Isis.
Yes.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do lots of shows in the future on different goddesses, and I think it's important to always welcome them, as Elvira and I did before the show started, by talking about her and welcoming her into the space, and then taking a moment to say thank you and honoring her energy. And so, thank you to Elvira, and thank you to Isis for bringing her wisdom and her guidance and her presence and her healing and her heart.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for being in this this circle of ether across the globe that we've created on this show, and go if you must, stay if you will. Hail and farewell, Isis.
Hail and farewell, Isis.
Yes.
So, wow. I think we're at our...
We're close to being at our cutoff.
At our cutoff time, but actually, this is our fourth show. Congratulations.
Yay!
And next week it will be...
One!
The perfect antidote to athames.
Yes, so we'll talk about wands and how come Harry Potter made them so cool and where you can find dragon core. No, none of that stuff. But we'll talk about, you know, the Wiccan roots of wands.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need one? Where you find one without having a wand maker to go to on Diagon Alley. And
I know. But gosh, there's no Ollivanders. I'm crushed.
Well, there is. It's just, you know, at Universal Studios, and it's, you know, yeah.
Well, I'm not going down to Los Angeles to go there. Thank you. I grew up there, and I came away from there, and I escaped. So,
yeah.
But. And, you know, interesting is that with having done this show about Isis, it's one more step back to our roots.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we said at the beginning, where we started and when we kind of got started in this, we chose to follow it with Egypt and all of that. And yet now we're bringing it forward as adults and putting it into a perspective of what other things it means.
Yeah. So I encourage you to go out and find Isis out in the world and let her be your gateway drug into more goddess worship, because she's a good one to bring you in and have you feel a connection to a beautiful, powerful feminine force.
Mm-hmm. Because she definitely has the grounded roots in that.
Yeah.
And I think that we do have, in our area here, I was just mentioning that we have places that do work with Isis and the Fellowship of Isis up at Geyserville and Isis Oasis, and then there are others that I know group-wise here, but it's kind of interesting. Because when I remembered we took Isis, I thought, I remember you're doing it a couple of months ago,
right.
Goddess of the Month.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she keeps coming around.
She does keep coming around.
Yeah.
And we need her, too.
Yeah.
We do need her, too.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
So... But I guess at this point, we also want to thank all of you for listening once again and participating in the chat room.
Yeah.
I feel that I would like to, but I have had a little bit of a different technical situation, so I'm kind of hamstrung right now. But other than that, I think we've got, you know, got a good group here.
I'm
thankful for that.
And thanks to Alan for working the board and making sure that everything got set up and that we are staying on time.
Which is last time not.
Right. Have a beautiful night.
Good night, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.